Morning. Of all the 90th anniversary celebrations Tempe Church has ever had, we've only ever played the Princess Bride at one of them. So there's a little trivia for you to take away from today. Isaiah chapter 11 is where we'll be in just a minute. If you want to open your Bibles to the book of Isaiah chapter 11 that Dave began reading for us earlier. We are celebrating 90 years, really more than 90 years, but 90 years that we can track of owning property for the Tempe Church of Christ in Tempe, Arizona. And so thank you to all of our guests who are here today. If you're not normally here with us, we would love to just have a record that you were here. And so please fill out one of the cards in front of you and get that to one of our greeters or somebody who looks like they belong from week to week. And we would love to just know that you were here today celebrating with us. We are kicking off as well today, in addition to celebrating these 90 years of service to God, we're kicking off a new series leading us up to Advent, and the series is called Inconceivable. And so last year we talked about the idea of expecting and Jesus coming into the world, and yet when we look at the kingdom of God, and when we look at what God does and how he operates, so often it's in such surprising and inconceivable ways. That we're going to run with this theme for about a month and see where we go. And so we're going to discover and explore the kingdom of God and the inconceivable ways that he is working in the world. Things that are, or you may have heard the saying before, it is what it is, which is true until it isn't, right? Things tend to change. And so things are what they are until they aren't anymore, and God is at work, and we are trying to work with him. And so we're so excited for you to be here with us today to talk a little bit about where we've been as a church, but also what God is doing in the here and now, because we believe he's doing very powerful things. So begin this morning with me, if you will, reading from Isaiah chapter 11. I'm going to begin in verse 6. Isaiah 11, verse 6, and it reads like this. The wolf will live with the lamb, and the leopard will lie down with the young goat. The calf and the young lion will feed together, and a little child will lead them. The cow and the bear will graze. Their young will lie down together, and a lion will eat straw like an ox. A nursing child will play over the snake's hole. Toddlers will reach right over the serpent's den. They won't harm or destroy anywhere on my holy mountain. The earth will surely be filled with the knowledge of the Lord, just as the water covers the sea. I love this picture of animals that don't go together, learning how to get along. If Bill Murray, I think, were to insert his famous line from Ghostbusters here, it'd be something like, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria, right? There's something about this picture that's very beautiful, but at the same time, unbelievable. It's inconceivable to imagine a lion being so close to its prey and yet doing nothing about that. Or instead, deciding it will eat grass. This is not the nature of the world that we know and live in, right? And yet Isaiah says, imagine this. This unbelievable, inconceivable, peaceable kingdom of God. This picture behind us, Edward Hicks painted some time ago, called the Peaceable Kingdom, intended to represent this idea from Isaiah. So we have these animals living together in harmony like never before. And this shalom, this peace that pervades creation, it washes over everything, it immerses everything, it baptizes everything in the very presence and peace of God. And we wonder, how could this be? How could this be? I can't even imagine what that might be like. This utopian landscape, it defies our current experiences of reality, our conceptions of how things could work. And so I like what Edward Hicks does with this painting. I don't know how well you can see it. I think you can. So there's the Isaiah 11 scene here in the main picture. And then off to the back on your left, I believe, you have some additional characters joining in. So you see some Europeans, and they're meeting with Native Americans, and they're having this peaceful interaction, or maybe they're about to share a meal together. And it seems like a very subversive type of thing to stick into this, because we know while meals and meetings like this may have taken place and did, they didn't last long, did they? That peaceable kingdom often turned to something else, something of conquering. We know Native Americans warred among their tribes, and then, of course, Europeans come along, and we know what Europeans have done, right? So we know this peaceable kingdom idea doesn't always last, and maybe we can just get a glimpse of it for a while, but it doesn't seem to stay with us. It tends to fade. We have our reasons to be skeptical that a peaceable kingdom and lions and lambs and wolves and sheep might ever get along. And Isaiah's audience, as they're reading this, they have their own reasons to be skeptical, right? The northern kingdom has been beleaguered and mistreated and beaten down by the Assyrians. They've been conquered and enslaved. The southern kingdom isn't much better. They only get to keep their kingdom as long as they pay their taxes. And so they are very literally, or figuratively, I guess, stumped. And Isaiah speaks into this and he says, "But a shoot will grow. There's a king on the way. And this king will be like no other king you've ever known. This kingdom will operate with a whole new ecological and economical system than you've ever seen before." And so we have this persistent nagging question that Isaiah speaks into. And the question is something like, are our best days behind us? Have we already celebrated the best that could have been? And now it's kind of back to the real world. We had a nice reprieve of peace. But nature is still out there. Alfred Lord Tennyson talked about this tension like this. He said, "Who trusted God was love indeed, and love creation's final law. Though nature red in tooth and claw with violence shrieked against his creed." So we're believers in Jesus, and we say, "Let me introduce you to this God of love." While at the same time, we live in a world where nature seems to just rail at least with indifference, right? And often with violence. And so how do we live into this kingdom ecosystem where even the animals seem to know better than they've known before? This is the kingdom that Jesus has inaugurated, but we haven't seen it in its fullness yet. Jesus, the unking, he provides over this theocracy that's not like the theocracies that we might set up. And so I begin to wonder, what can I do to help fix this broken world? Give me, say, 90 years. And what could I accomplish, just a drop in the bucket, with the broken systems that I engage with from day to day? So I think, first of all, we need to learn to think a little bit bigger. So Isaiah does this for us. He gives us this beautiful picture that seems almost unreachable and inconceivable. How could that be? And yet you have to have it. You have to have this ideal out in front of you that says, that's worth at least shooting for. Even if I fall short, maybe I'll be better than I've been. So we need to learn to think a little bit bigger from day to day. But I think with that, we also have to hold, on the other hand, this idea that maybe I need to also learn to act smaller. So think big, dream big dreams, but then act in very small ways. Let me explain a little bit what I mean by that. Imagine you had the freedom, the time, to pursue your most noble cause that you can imagine. You've got the time to do something you wouldn't have had otherwise. What is this most noble pursuit that comes to your mind? What are you going to do if you just have all the time you need to do it? So we might think of some beautiful, beautiful causes and dreams. But then we look at our life and we say, well, what do I do with the free time that I have? Sometimes it's less noble causes that we pursue in those moments of freedom. For instance, the average American could read about 200 books a year if they took that time that they spent scrolling social media to read instead of just scroll. So we have this instinct that we're trying to overcome. And we want it to be noble. We want to be better than we've been. And yet this instinct is to bite and devour. And sometimes it begins a little bit closer to home than I care to admit, because I think, well, I would have done some noble things given the time and the means. So is that true? Because I think maybe before I can begin to wonder, how do I train a lion to not snap at a calf? I should first consider, how do I train myself not to snap at my children? My spouse, my coworkers? How do I not devour my political opponent, let alone my enemies? We've learned to eat one another in a lot more civilized ways, maybe, than ever before in history, haven't we? And yet Jesus speaks into this. He says, there's this peaceable kingdom. And he challenges us with some hard sayings of how to get there. So I hope we can take some heart. I mean, it seems inconceivable until we conceive of it. And then all of a sudden it's happening. Things are breaking into the world that we've never seen before. I like what my teacher friend used to say about children, usually about getting into trouble, but it works in the opposite direction. If we try, it says, what one will think of, two will talk about, and three will do it. So I love this group of Christian people who long for something better than what we see, and we want to do something about it. And so we get together week to week, day to day, and we try to live a different kind of life than maybe we've been able to live before. We try to expand our conception of what reality could actually be. And hopefully it's not in a fairy tale-like way, because we know if you throw a simple answer at a very complex problem, it will fall apart really fast, right? So this isn't meant to just be like, well, just be hopeful. But imagine how Jesus gives us real reason for hope. So I love this group, this Tempe Church. I've only been able to be a part of it for about a year. But we are doing something. We're building on this collective muscle memory that's 90 plus years old. And this is a really powerful thing when you get people together that are moving in the same direction with similar goals. They talk about soldiers marching, and I imagine that's about the least interesting thing that a soldier ever does, right? And yet that's where it kind of begins. And yet if you interview different soldiers, they talk about an almost euphoric sense of camaraderie that they have once they get in sync and in step with the other people in their unit, because they don't feel smaller because of it. They feel like they're actually a part of a bigger whole. And you think, well, why do soldiers go into battle and they leap on grenades to save the people around them? And they do all of these really odd things. You think, well, they believe in freedom or whatever value that sent them to battle in the first place. But it seems more likely, and by reports given, that they actually just cared about the guy next to them. They had spent so much time doing the same things together that they had this bond that was really, really difficult to break. And when I think about that in terms of our church, I think about some of the more sometimes mundane things that we do every week. And we get together and we sing songs, which of course are worship and praise. But what an interesting phenomenon to have 140 or so people get together and we all try to lend our voice to the same song and make it sound a little better. Or take communion every week. What a beautiful time to be alive where 140 people sit down together and we do this together with Jesus. And we don't want to kill each other. We're for each other. We want the best, genuinely, for the people around us and for people who aren't in this room. And we're building this muscle memory as a group that isn't easily broken. And here's what flows out of that. I help for people who are struggling with homelessness. Oasis Campus Ministry, so that students who are on their way in life might find reasons to be hopeful. Food pantries, Brothers Keeper, Let's Start Talking, and Friends Speak. All of these different things begin to emerge with the heart of God when a few people get together and say, how can we spread peace? How can we spread the life of Jesus? Sharing the struggles of grief and loss, true, real, authentic relationship with God and each other. This is what grows from life pursued together with God. So for 90 plus years, members of this church have been defying this natural tendency for things to fall apart, by just showing up week after week and saying, I'd like to build something more peaceful than that. And we stand with Jesus and we believe in God's ability to nurture us along until nature itself begins to change and look different. So we learn to think big and dream big dreams, but we have to start and act in small ways to get those big results. I know that seems a little counterintuitive, maybe, but if you want to solve the world's problems, it kind of starts with me, right? And what's right in front of me? Adam Sandler sings kind of a funny but morbid song about the person who wants to be a hero. And in each verse, this problem arises. And a heroic person steps forward, but it never ends quite right because the person who steps forward isn't quite capable for the task. They want to be the hero, but they're not quite ready. So we start with these smaller systems within our reach, and we begin setting that in order, and all of a sudden we realize we're reaching further than we ever have before. Or put another way, where is peace needed in my life? Who do I love that I need to be closer to? Who do I not love very well? What's within my reach? What's within my reach that I actually care enough to do something about today? And if I did that thing today, that's a pretty good day's work. And Jesus calls us into that day-to-day work so our capacities can grow to match our sympathies, right? So that peace can be more and more of a reality. So we begin fixing the world by fixing what's in front of us, what's within us, and the world gets better by default. And then maybe we can do bigger things than we've ever dreamed of before. You get enough selves fixing selves with Jesus, and that's no small feat. Just imagine what we could do then. So what we're going to do next as we look at a little bit of what Tempe Church has been doing is we're going to look at a slideshow that's been put together for us. We're going to see some of the amazing things that have happened over the last 90 years as people have stood up for God's shalom and peaceful presence here. In the late 1920s, a few courageous souls started the Tempe Church of Christ. These were gathered from Tempe, Scottsdale, Phoenix, Chandler, and surrounding areas like Gilbert. The congregation began by meeting in a tent on a corner of Mill and 8th, which we believe 8th is now part of University, although there's sections of 8th Street that's still out there. So today, we're not exactly sure which corner, but Mill and University, that's where this church started meeting. In 1929, there was a gas station on the northeast corner, and Tempe High School was on the southeast corner, so we're not really sure which of the other two corners we might have been occupying then. The area surrounding the high school was often used for public events, and it's possible that the church's tent was pitched on those grounds on Sundays. The city of Tempe has grown and changed a lot through the years, obviously. For 90 plus years, the Tempe Church of Christ has grown alongside with its neighborhood. And the church has responded to new challenges, always continuing to share Jesus with its community. It says in 1885, the Territorial Normal School at Tempe was founded to train teachers to work in the public schools, ASC. On the photo stands for Arizona State College. The name taken in 1945. The school attained university status, of course, in 1958. The building at 10th Street and Ash Avenue was built in 1929. And the first minister there was William Irvin. The first elders were brothers Croom, Estes, and Goodwin. An old business record shows the church had a four-digit phone number, 2151, without a prefix. Little time has gone by since then. During the Great Depression, most of the members moved away in search of employment, so between 1929 and 1939. And during much of the next 15 years, the congregation struggled to survive financially. And yet here we are. At the end of the Depression, the congregation began to grow in numbers. This was also due to the beginning of World War II, an increased number of military personnel living near Tempe. The Tempe Church building was enlarged twice during this time to accommodate larger attendance. The Tempe Church of Christ has always been very active in our community. In 1953, Boy Scout Troop 77 was started by William Nelson, who was then the minister at 10th and Ash, to attract neighborhood families to the church. Several scout families did attend church activities, including Bible class and Sunday worship. So here we have Rex Hornbaker, assistant scoutmaster, as he's standing off to the left, with William Nelson, who was the minister, off to the right. Today, the 10th and Ash Avenue building continues to serve as a meeting place. It's the home of Chabad. I don't know how to pronounce that. The ASU Jewish Student Center. You gotta have some phlegm in your throat, I think. In 1958, the 10th and Ash building had reached its maximum capacity, so to relieve the overcrowding, a second congregation started meeting in East Tempe. In 1962, the 10th and Ash congregation decided to sell their property and build a larger facility at 707 East Broadway. Then in 1966, the congregation, which was meeting in East Tempe, sold its property and reunited with the congregation meeting on Broadway. Another faith community, The Door, now occupies that building. In May of 1977, the Broadway congregation once again had outgrown its space and needed a larger facility, so the Broadway Road property was landlocked. It's hard to believe, but in 1977, there were still several large parcels of land for sale in the general area of the church building. And here's a quote from the brochure. The committee has focused on a minimum of 10 acres in the basic geographical area of Tempe's population center and within a reasonable distance of Arizona State University. So 11 different possible sites were being researched that had 10 acres available. Eventually, the decision was made to purchase the 9.75 acres at 2424 South Mill Avenue, where we continue to worship and serve the Tempe community today. The first Sunday in the new facility was May 2nd of 1982, and Alan Cranston apparently remembers mowing the grass from the building all the way out to Mill Avenue. So thank you, Alan. It's a lot of grass. The size and appearance of the property has changed over the years, as has our signage. In 1982, it looked something like this. In the 1990s, it looked like this. And in 2019, it looks like this. But of course, a church is much more than its property. It's more than its location or its name. It's the people who come to worship and serve God together. So finding reliable, suitable material to create a historical narrative for the Tempe Church of Christ 90th anniversary has been a challenge. A dynamic congregation is much, much more than a building or an address. The church is God's people. So much of our history resides within the people who have made the Church of Christ in Tempe, Arizona, their home for all of these very many years. Many members of our family are not with us anymore, which is always a heartfelt loss to say goodbye to beloved friends and family, history, and memories. We have a few more pictures of people who have been with us for a long time, so maybe you'll recognize a few of these. So as this slideshow wraps up, we want to encourage you to treasure this time of celebration and to work to preserve the 90-plus year legacy of sharing our memories of Tempe Church of Christ with generations to follow, which, of course, at our very heart, has always been to pursue life with God together. Thank you all so much. I also do want to take a moment to just thank Noreen Green and others who helped to put the slides together and put a lot of hours in collecting pictures and documents to just help us get a good sense of where we've been. And so thank you, Noreen. And as a congregation of people who have been around for 90 plus years, I'm interested in being around for 90 more. So I'm so grateful for the commitment, the money, the energies, all of that it takes to make a people group, a faith group, a community of Jesus come together and work in positive ways beyond just getting together. So I want to thank you all, and you should feel honored for your roles that you've played in this congregation in years past, and that this is a great time for us to consider how we're participating now and how we're driving the mission of God forward in Arizona in this time and place. So as we consider those ideas and where we fit in this big picture that God is painting, why don't we stand and we worship together?